This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. A dangerous and surreal scene unfolded at the U.S. Capitol yesterday afternoon as pro-Trump extremists breached the complex, resulting in the death of one of the extremists, a lockdown, and hours of chaos and violence. To get perspective on this unprecedented event, public radio reporter Katie Anderson reached out to Andy Downs, the executive director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue at Fort Wayne, to get his initial reactions to the situation and how this could be a turning point in American politics. Here's the conversation.
Andy Downs, thanks so much for taking time to chat with me today.
Well, I'd like to say it's my pleasure, but obviously it's a tragic reason for us to be talking.
Absolutely. You know, we've been watching some of these events unfold at the U.S. Capitol. Security has been breached and buildings are under lockdown. And as someone who has studied politics for, you know, virtually your whole life, what was your initial reaction when this started happening?
You know, I think for a lot of people, I assumed some folks actually would go to the Capitol. I mean, there was a rally there this morning. The president pretty much encouraged them to go. We as a people are more than happy to get together and to express our opinions. And why wouldn't we expect some folks to go to the Capitol and to express their position on the issues? That should not have surprised anybody. For me, the first images were when I began to get a little bit worried, because these were not people who were just stopping at the normal security barriers. They were walking up to the Capitol building. It didn't take long for them to have a large mass of people trying to get into the Capitol building. So it very quickly went from something that I think a lot of us would expect to see to something that I think most of us would imagine never could have been.
Is there any kind of precedent to this?
You know, you think about this summer and all of the protests that happened, most of them obviously peaceful, but some that did get violent. We did not see anything like this. And because the Capitol security and others took a rather passive approach initially, there will now be some great difficulty in trying to get people removed from the building. We don't see these sorts of things. Think about the Red for Ed gatherings down in Indianapolis from last session. Think about basically every sort of gathering that we see, rarely does it become something like this that is unbelievably shocking.
And as journalists and as scholars, we know that language and word choice matters. We're seeing people call these people protesters, rioters. Some people are even calling it terrorism. But just from what we're seeing right now, how would you define this?
It's interesting. The language that is being used is quickly moving to coup, terrorist, traitor, those sorts of things are coming up much, much faster or much more frequently than we might have expected them to. If you've been watching, for example, Fox or Newsmax or others like that, there have been plenty of people there who very quickly said, this is not the way we're supposed to do this. So these actions are being condemned pretty much from the right and the left. We've heard from a couple of legislators, Republican legislators, who, for example, have said this should end the objections right now, because this is an attempt to take over the country. The objections should end at this moment. When we get back into session, we should take care of this in very fast order. But this is unprecedented, as we have said before. The language is very quickly becoming much more accurate, I would argue, in describing what's happening than we might have expected it to, because we are seeing both the left and right use that sort of language.
We know it's a rapidly evolving and changing situation, but what do you think the outcome of this might be? How might our world be different after the events at the Capitol today?
We're definitely going to be living in a different era. You know, we've already heard from some folks overseas who have said, if this were happening in our country, you would be condemning us. We have heard people say they would never expect to see this in the United States. And at the same time, we have to remember this is happening in real time. So, for example, the people who saw footage of the initial individuals walking to the chamber floors, in some respects, they looked like a tourist group walking through the chamber. You know, they weren't carrying guns. They weren't rattling sabers and stomping. They were just processing like you would expect folks to. So you can sort of understand if there was, say, a Capitol guard standing inside the building who just happened to see some people walking in, might be thinking that this is unusual, but not something that's out of the realm of possibilities. So when these things happen in real time, for us to get a more accurate understanding or to have the language shift as quickly as it did is, I think, very, very interesting. And I think it's also indicative of the fact that we already knew we were in a different era because of the pandemic, because of the rhetoric that's been used for quite some time now and the obvious partisanship that exists in the world right now. I think we have an opportunity here. And that's the question for me. Will we take the opportunity? The opportunity is to actually realize there are things that unite us. There are things we can do together. And instead of having constant gridlock, actually having elected officials who are trying to get things done on which they agree and then not do things they don't agree on. That's the way this has worked for a long time. Maybe this is going to be the thing that pushes us back into cooperation. Unfortunately, it also may be the thing that just drives us further apart.
That's Andy Downs, the executive director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University Fort Wayne, speaking yesterday afternoon with reporter Katie Anderson, his reaction to the events on Capitol Hill on Wednesday. For students making the transition from middle school to high school, Bishop Knoll Institute in Hammond is hosting an entrance exam on Saturday, January 23rd, beginning at 8 a.m., it'll be at the school, which is at 1519 Hoffman Street in Hammond. Lakeshore Public Radio Sharon Jackson spoke with Jeff Sturr, who is Bishop Knoll's Director of Admissions, about the test, the tuition, student population at the school, and diversity at the Catholic-affiliated school. Here's the conversation.
I know that your school is taking very special COVID precautions as well, right?
Correct, yeah. So our next entrance exam is scheduled for January 23rd, Saturday. 8 a.m. is the start time, and we usually wrap up between 11:30 and noon. But yes, in light of everything going on, we want to make sure that every test taker that enters the building feels extremely comfortable when they come into the building. You know, many of these students have been virtual since last March. So they may not have been back in a school building yet. So we want to make sure that when they enter, they feel comfortable, and that's one thing that factors into the test taking as well. If they show up and they have some anxiety or if they feel a little nervous about the settings or the environment, they might not perform as well. So we want to do everything we can to make sure that they feel comfortable, that they're able to perform at their very best. So, obviously we emphasize to the parents that if they've obviously recently been in contact with anyone who's tested positive for COVID, if they're awaiting a test for COVID or if they're showing any symptoms that morning, to just keep them home. We'll have plenty of other test dates after this that we could reschedule. So that's first and foremost, is making sure the parents, know their children and keep them home if they're feeling ill. When they enter the door, they'll be temperature checked. So before they even enter the building, right at the front doors, they'll have their temperature checked to make sure that all checks out. Obviously, if it's higher than 100.4, they will be sent home. But again, we could reschedule them at a later date. Once they enter the building, they drop off their payment and they're checked in, so pretty much hands-free, and then they'll proceed to the testing location. And the great thing about our setup right now is that we have our cafeteria that is spaced out accordingly, so we have removable desks that we bring in. Everything's spaced out 6 feet or more all sides around, and then our StreamLab and Innovation Center, which is a huge space, and that allows us to fit students at computer banks and spread apart at least 6 feet to make sure that they're safe. All their snacks, their water, and their granola bars, that's all set out the night before, so that when they come in, they're not really having to have contact and receive things handed to them from other individuals. All the testing material, everything will be at their desk. So we're doing everything we can to provide those safeguards in the world of COVID.
It costs $25 to take the test?
Correct.
Okay, how come? What's with the fee?
So the fee kind of goes into the building being open on a Saturday, the staff that's involved in helping through the day. We'll have to bring in certain staff members to administer the temperatures, to proctor the exam, to use the facilities that we have. So it's a small fee. That's what we usually charge in the past to all of our test takers. And then plus going through Scholastic and the high school placement exam, there's a fee involved with that. So all the testing materials that we receive from Scholastic, we incur a cost. So we're just trying to offset those a little bit through that fee.
Gotcha. And what is on the test?
So basically, it's an overall assessment test. It's very similar to what the students may see if they take in the NWEA test or any type of standardized test, high step test at the elementary school level. But it covers 5 main components: verbal, quantitative, and then reading, mathematics, and language. Like I said, they'll be very familiar with this type of test, if they've taken any type of standardized test in the past. Plus, it's a great way for us to gauge an assessment on where they're at, grade equivalency, if they're possibly able to take an honors level course, or if they may need a little more support in a certain area of study when they arrive at Bishop Knoll.
Is the test designed to I mean, can it be passed by all students or even students who are maybe in like a gen ed course as opposed to an advanced placement course? Is it designed for you guys to get like the cream of the crop, like the most academically advanced students?
Really, overall speaking, the test is more of an assessment. Like, that's one of the biggest things that we look at. It's not really a pass-fail. We look at the composite score and the national percentile and local percentile of what the student ranks in. But first and foremost, an assessment to see where they stand. I'm one, and as well as our principal, you know, a student may show up, have a bad day, and just did not test that well that day. But their grades at their other school, their other standardized test scores are strong. So really, this is not the end-all, be-all. It's an assessment, and it's one of the metrics we use when we base our acceptance of students. So, you know, if their score is a little bit lower, but then we work with the school, you know, in order to register, they have to fill out a form that requires to request their transcripts from that school. In that transcript request, we receive their grades from 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, the behavior report, as well as their standardized test scores. So we look at that as well. And then we work closely with the principals to see if there's any other things that we maybe need to be aware of. Any students that may be at a school where they receive either like an IEP type plan or anything of that nature.
A what?
An IEP. So basically it's like a 504 plan for any students that may need extra assistance with their homework. So they get a little extra time on tests or homework at their current school. So if they're in that situation, they do actually get a little bit of extra time as well on the exam. So, you know, it's really not set up to, you know, just take the cream of the crop or disclude any students that might not be as high performing as some students. More of an assessment base that we use as one of our three metrics to base our decisions on acceptance.
Do all students get accepted? What does it take to be accepted into Bishop Knoll?
No, unfortunately, there are certain students that will not be accepted. And again, it's going to be a combination of the entrance exam test, their current performance at their school, their standardized test, you know, NWA scores and ISTEP test, behavior reports, and then recommendations from their principal or teacher.
I'm just curious about the population makeup of Bishop Knoll. Is it, I mean, do all races and creeds and colors go there? What's the breakdown, black, white, Asian?
Oh, yeah, I mean, to really just give a general overview, and I actually went here and graduated in 98, and the demographic back then to now has always continued to be very diverse. We have students from Illinois, from Indiana. I think it's close to 35 different towns or cities in the state of Indiana, you know, as far east as Portage or Porter County, as far south in Lake County as places like Cedar Lake, and then all the way up in between. So we do have a very diverse demographic makeup of our students with African-American, Hispanic, white, all kind of here in the building. So, you know, that's one feature that we really emphasize because I think it's a great way to interact with other students from different areas. You know, in terms of obviously we're a Catholic private school, but we have a percent of our population here that are not Catholic. They might be Baptist, they might just be general Christian, or they might not really deem a certain faith. So, you know, again, that's, we don't just exclude or include Catholics only. We are open to different religions as well here at Bishop Knoll.
And how much is tuition there?
This year, for students who are not part of the Diocese of Gary, it's $9,450. Students who are part of a parish in the Diocese of Gary, it's a reduced rate at $8,900. Now, that was this year. In terms of when you look forward to school year 2021-22, that may change a little bit, but for this year, that was the tuition cost.
That's Jeff Sturr, who is Bishop Knoll Institute's Director of Admissions, speaking with Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson. By the way, Bishop Knoll Institute is celebrating its 100th anniversary this coming September. Gary Roosevelt High School was one of only three high schools in Indiana constructed exclusively for African Americans. It's also where region native Michael Jackson won his first talent show. At one point, the 1930s building was one of the largest, mostly black high schools in the Midwest. Gary Roosevelt sits empty now after years of deterioration and a devastating pipe burst in 2019. Indiana Landmarks has placed the building on its 10 most endangered list. Inside Indiana Business reporter Mary Rachel Redmond has the story from Gary.
City shouldn't let it go. They should never let it go because this is history.
They always told us that we just had to be better than everybody else because we were all black.
Gary, Indiana in the 1920s was a booming city of steel, even nationally recognized for its innovative public schools. But not everyone was welcome in certain classrooms. And when the city attempted to integrate a few black students to its all-white Emerson High School in 1927, it ended in disaster.
White students walked out of Emerson after attempts of integration, and the school corporation in reaction decided to build this school, and then it went on to again be a beacon of black excellence in the city of Gary.
Roosevelt High School was built in 1930, and it was one of only three all-African American high schools in the state of Indiana, a source of pride for many residents here in Gary.
So this was our center of culture, and many of the city people that were in positions of authority or let's say influence for Rooseveltians. But this school was always considered a sacred spot.
But this sacred spot has fallen on hard times. A faulty heating system coupled with a polar vortex in 2019 caused a series of pipes to burst. And it was the final straw that closed the 90-year-old historical building for good.
With the cleanup of the water damage and mold, it is $8 to $15 million. So that's just to get it back to how it was operating previously.
From the school district's perspective, we're not planning on opening the school for a school district, but I don't see that the school district would ever use it for a school again.
There's that historical aspect of it.
Gary Mayor Jerome Prince is all too familiar with the rich history of Roosevelt. And in an effort to rebuild his city, and perhaps Roosevelt, he's turned to Gary's most famous family of singers for a little help.
I've had at least a few conversations with members of the Jackson family who have a renewed interest in helping to reimagine, as we call it, the city of Gary, which includes at least some desire to help facilitate a renovation on the Roosevelt School site. My primary focus is to rebuild the city.
So is this part of the original structure?
Yeah, this is the original structure.
This is home to me, yeah. I hate to see it in this condition.
And while the school undoubtedly served as a point of pride for Gary's black community in its heyday, its strong alumni base is determined to keep the Roosevelt legacy alive for future generations.
We are interested in being involved in whatever happens to the building, that we are staying ready to assist them and mainly be some part of the decision making.
To the Gary Roosevelt squad.
Youngsters don't know the history of Roosevelt, and I think they should know about the only black school at that time. It's a place that I always cherish.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you on Monday.